Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We were motivated Marines. The President of the United States told us to go different places, and we went. That's what you do in the military.
Senator Dan Sullivan sidesteps a debate on President Trump's National Guard deployments. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Governor Dunleavy says education reform is taking a back seat for him during his final year.
You know, I've always said this for year after year after year, that once the issue of money is settled, nobody wants to talk about policy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. With U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan running for re-election next year, how he navigates the big controversies of President Trump's second term could determine his political future. Sullivan made a rare leftward tack Thursday, voting with Democrats on a failed bill to extend health care subsidies. Faced with a different hot controversy earlier that day, Sullivan opted for a political sidestep. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin explains.
The subject of the armed services hearing was one of the biggest disputes of President Trump's second term, his deployment of the National Guard within the United States. Democrats railed against the dispatch of the military to American cities. Some Republicans on the committee vigorously defended the urban deployments. Sullivan did neither. When it was his turn to speak, he vigorously defended Guard deployments that no one is arguing about. He spoke about the National Guard's role repelling Russian and Chinese forces over the Pacific and the Bering Sea.
Because these are frontline operations going directly against our adversaries, wing to wing, when our fighters go intercept Russian bear bombers and MiGs that are armed. Dangerous work. We do it all the time up in Alaska.
Sullivan's campaign materials feature Trump's photo and endorsement prominently. Sullivan rarely criticizes him. Trump won a majority of Alaskan votes each time he was on the general election ballot. Still, even in a red state, a Republican candidate could face peril by sticking too close to Trump if some of his actions become toxic to voters. Sullivan last week left the constitutional debate to other senators. He brought up the National Guard's actions in western Alaska this fall when it rescued people after fierce storms washed their houses away. And Sullivan said when he was in the Marines in the 1990s, some in his battalion were sent to the southern border and some went to fight forest fires in the Pacific Northwest.
We were motivated Marines. The President of the United States told us to go different places and we went. That's what you do in the military.
Sullivan did not engage as Democrats, and independent Senator Angus King of Maine spoke passionately against the Guard deployments to Chicago and other cities where governors don't want them.
The idea that we are saying that the president has the power to, in his own mind, decide what an emergency is and then deploy troops into our cities, I think is exceedingly dangerous. And the people who founded this country thought so, too.
King read the words of several founding fathers who warned of tyranny if a president has a standing army to use against his own people. A Trump administration witness countered that George Washington himself sent soldiers to put down a citizens' rebellion in Pennsylvania. Senator Tim Sheehy of Montana was one of the Republicans who gave a full-throated defense of the urban deployments in support of the Trump administration's massive deportation campaign. Sheehy addressed his questions to the top general responsible for the defense of North America.
As a military commander, what do you feel is a greater threat to our national security? 500 volunteers, trained National Guardsmen, walking the streets of our cities, or 20 million illegal immigrants who've entered this country over the past 5 years?
The general did answer, but it hardly mattered. Sheehy, a freshman senator, was planting a rhetorical stake in the ground. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Governor Mike Dunleavy is dropping a longtime priority ahead of next year's legislative session. At his annual holiday open house last week, Dunleavy told reporters he isn't planning to revive his push to reform the state's schools.
You know, I've always said this for year after year after year, that once the issue of money is settled, nobody wants to talk about policy. So unfortunately for us, I think we're going to skip over that this year, not from my perspective, but I don't think the legislature, enough of the people in the legislature, really have a desire to fix the outcomes.
Improving the state's public schools was the top issue in the last two legislative sessions. Dunleavy vetoed a series of bills seeking to boost public school funding, saying they didn't do enough to improve student performance. He instead called for a variety of reforms that he said would help Alaska's low test scores, in part by boosting charter schools and correspondence homeschool. But lawmakers overcame Dunleavy's vetoes to break the stalemate earlier this year. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute co-chairs the State House Education Committee. She says lawmakers will continue to look at ways to boost student test scores, even with budgets expected to be tight this year.
We need to ensure the best value for the dollar. Obviously, accountability is very important. At the same time, we need to make sure that our kids have opportunities. And if we look to other states, there's a lot going on in other states that we could be doing here in Alaska.
She says she'd also like to see a smaller boost to public school funding this year to keep up with inflation. Representative Andy Story, a Juneau Democrat who also co-chairs the House Education Committee, says she wants lawmakers to override Dunleavy's veto of a corporate tax bill tied to education funding.
Those dollars are scheduled to go for reading intervention and career tech. And that would just, to me, be a game changer.
Backers pitched the tax bill as a way to extract more state money from outside tech companies who sell to Alaskans. Dunleavy said he couldn't support it without a larger fiscal plan. Dunleavy said he hoped lawmakers would pass a bill that would create a pilot program of schools run by Alaska Native tribes. But Dunleavy told reporters his main goals for his final year are largely in other areas, including a forthcoming fiscal plan and preparation for a possible North Slope gas pipeline. Lawmakers reconvene in Juneau on January 20th. Powerful wind blasted south-central Alaska for the second weekend in a row, with gusts topping 70 miles per hour in parts of Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. National Weather Service meteorologist Carson Jones says the wind was less severe than last weekend's Matsu storm, which prompted a local disaster declaration.
It wasn't quite as strong as the previous event, but Palmer was still reporting winds near or above 80 miles an hour. And then Anchorage had some OBS and Jay Bear and Ted Stevens that were above 70 miles an hour.
Officials did not report any major damage. In Anchorage, they said the wind led to downed trees, some roof damage, and power outages. The Anchorage Fire Department also warned of icy roads. Jones says a high-pressure system along the Alaska-Canada border is feeding cold weather into a large jet stream over western Alaska. That jet stream is steering the frigid, windy weather across Anchorage and the Matsu. And Jones says it likely isn't going anywhere in the next 2 weeks.
It's going to remain dry and cold and breezy with chances for elevated winds. Really, probably until maybe the solstice is when we start to see maybe a pattern change.
Jones says current weather forecasts predict the jet stream will break down in certain spots, pulling in cold air from Siberia as well as the Yukon. He says that'll spread frigid weather across the state.
As we move on into next weekend, we will have cold air coming in from both areas. So there's a chance for more widespread below average temperatures for the whole state.
Both Anchorage and the Matsu are forecasted to see low temperatures at or below zero through the rest of the week. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, friends, family, and fellow musicians remember the life of Athabaskan fiddler Bill Stevens.
When he'd start a tune, he wouldn't tell you what the name of the tune was going to be, but he'd tell you the key. A good clue for the guitar players.
That's ahead. Stay with us. The body of a Wasilla doctor facing recent charges that he possessed images of child sexual abuse was found in a fire Sunday at his home, according to Alaska State Troopers. Troopers said in a statement posted online this afternoon that remains found in the burned home had been identified as 46-year-old Ryan McDonough. An investigation of the fire's cause continues. McDonough had been charged with 10 felony counts of possessing child sexual abuse material. Local, state, and federal investigators working together in an operation dubbed Task Force Dawnbreaker arrested McDonough on Thursday. McDonough's attorney said he pleaded not guilty on McDonough's behalf at an initial court appearance Friday. Court records show McDonough's wife paid his $50,000 cash bail. McDonough was an interventional cardiologist at Matsu Regional Medical Center and Matsu Medical Group until the hospital fired him shortly after learning of the charges, according to a hospital spokesperson. Governor Mike Dunleavy appointed McDonough to the state medical board in August. A spokesperson for the governor said McDonough resigned in November. A Fairbanks mining firm announced last week that it struck a deal to merge with a company in British Columbia. Under the proposed merger, Contango Ore and Vancouver-based Dolly Varden Silver Corporation would become one entity called Contango Silver and Gold. The main corporate office would be in Fairbanks, according to a press release. Rick Van Nieuwenhuyse is the CEO of Contango Ore and would retain that role for the combined companies if the merger goes through. He spoke during a call with investors last week.
Look, we think we're building a rocket ship here. We've got capital, we've got grade, we've got great management, we've got a great board behind us.
Contango has a hand in both active and exploratory projects in Alaska, some of which have encountered resistance. The company is the junior partner in a controversial venture that's mining gold ore at the Manh Choh mine near Tetlin and trucking it along 250 miles of public highways to a processing facility north of Fairbanks. Contango is also trying to develop mining projects in Hatcher Pass north of Palmer, as well as on land owned by an Alaska Native corporation that's surrounded by a national park in south-central Alaska. As for Dolly Varden, executives during the call mostly touted its Kitsault Valley resource as an asset for the proposed merger. That's an exploratory silver project in British Columbia, east of Ketchikan, across the Alaska-Canada border. The companies anticipate the deal to be finalized in late February or early March, according to last week's presentation. Alaska Native veterans have until the end of the month to claim 160 acres of federal land. The land grants were part of a government Native allotment program created over 100 years ago to promote homesteads and private property ownership. But it was shut down in 1971 after the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act passed. Vietnam veterans have been given a special exemption to apply for the land, but as KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, it isn't easy.
Congress passed the Native Allotment Program in 1906. Decades later, in the years leading up to the Land Claims Act, Natives scrambled to file for their land. But many Vietnam veterans missed out because they were overseas and engaged in combat. The Alaska Congressional delegation eventually succeeded in passing legislation to fix this. In 2019, President Trump signed a bill into law that opened a 5-year window for Native vets to file for their land. But there still have been some hurdles.
It's one thing to make laws, but it's quite another thing when the bureaucracy kicks in and starts developing these onerous processes that were really never anticipated.
Jim LaBelle's challenges began in boarding school. He says he and his younger brother, Kermit, were unable to qualify for their allotments because they couldn't prove that they worked the land they hoped to receive. Then, both brothers went to fight in the Vietnam War. Kermit was killed in action at the age of 18. After the war, LaBelle had about given up on efforts to claim his land, but tried again, and a few years ago, the government accepted his application.
I took a little doing, but I can't say that I'm very happy with the lands that I got.
LaBelle is Inupiaq, but wound up with land near the interior Alaska community of Tok, far away from his homelands.
It's an area I'm not familiar with, but was available at the time. The way I looked at the map, it looks like I'd have to have a helicopter to fly in.
LaBelle is now focused on getting his late brother Kermit's allotment. One of the challenges, providing a death certificate.
I also have to prove that he was killed in Vietnam. And I have to prove that he had a CIB, a Certificate of Indian Blood.
It's not a user-friendly process.
Michael Livingston has been helping vets like Jim LaBelle apply. He says he volunteers because many of those who are eligible, now in their 70s and 80s, have had such a hard time dealing with the bureaucracy, they've given up.
Out of the 2,000 veterans that are eligible, only about 500 have applied, so that's only about 25%.
As of mid-December, the Bureau of Land Management's website said it had received 519 applications, but fewer than 50 have been accepted.
So far, I've helped about 50 Alaska Native veterans apply for 160 acres of land, And that adds up to over 8,000 acres that potentially is going to return to the hands of Alaska Natives. So in that sense, it's been pretty rewarding.
Livingston encourages Native vets to file before the December 29th deadline, even if their application isn't finished. Senator Dan Sullivan says that's a good idea.
Get your application in. We can work with you. We can help. If it needs to be updated, we can do that.
Sullivan says staffers in his Alaska offices are prepared to assist. For now, he says, he's racing against the clock to get a bill passed to extend the program.
I just wish we could get my colleagues to see that this is not a big ask. Believe it or not, the bill is a two-word change. It's from 5 years to 10 years.
Sullivan says his bill has Republican support, and he's worked with Democrats to attach his legislation to a package of bills that includes things the Democrats want, but believe they continue to block it because they think it's a backdoor attempt to usher in more development, which he says is not true.
They've just been very reluctant to get more people land and access to federal lands in Alaska.
Even so, Sullivan hasn't given up on trying to win bipartisan support for an extension. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Over $3 million in federal housing assistance has been committed to reimbursing the state for supporting people who evacuated their homes after ex-Typhoon Halong. The Federal Emergency Management Agency announced its approval of the funds last week. The money falls under FEMA's Housing Assistance Program, which is different from its Individual Assistance Program. That program can support households with personal damages to property. Those impacted can still file for financial assistance by the extended deadline of February 20th. The public program will reimburse the state for providing shelter to displaced households. That includes hotel rooms or larger congregate shelters. Local government and tribal councils can still file for FEMA's public assistance for things like debris removal, rebuilding infrastructure, and preventative emergency measures. A new gymnasium opened in Koktovik this month, nearly 6 years after the community's old school burned down. It's the first step towards building a new school and a chance for students to have a place to play and practice sports again. Alaska Desk reporter Aliona Niden has more.
The sounds of Inupiaq dancing and drumming reverberate from the walls of the new gym in Koktovik as residents of the North Slope community of about 300 people celebrate the grand opening of the facility. Resident Flora Rexford has been teaching Inupiaq language and culture at the Harold Kavilik School for the last 20 years. A week after the opening, she says everyone in the village had been eagerly waiting for that day.
It was really emotional to see an actual gym in the community there and the kids enjoying it and playing, and it was a really good grand opening, much needed for our community.
The school was destroyed in a fire in early February of 2020. Officials said at the time that the fire was likely caused by a heater that was left on to thaw frozen pipes. After the fire, students attended classes in buildings throughout the village until the interim school opened the following fall. The facility did not have a gym, so sport practice often took place outside in freezing cold and with polar bears in the area. Later on, the borough built a temporary gym for school practice. But Rexford says the conditions were far from ideal.
I mean, just imagine the kids playing in the tent that they had, and it's cold and nothing was ever working right. Not being able to practice, and you know, you can tell the kids, you can just tell they're not as active.
Nathan Gordon Jr. is the mayor of the city of Koktovik. He says the lack of proper space for exercise led many students to leave the school and the village.
We lost a bunch of kids who went to boarding school because they weren't able to play in a gymnasium, which is going to be great for those kids to come back home and enjoy a gym with us.
And like in many Alaska villages, the gym was more than a place for sports.
It was staple for gathering. It was for feasts also. If there was so much people that were going to be included in a funeral, like they'd utilize that space.
The new gym is just the first step of the three-part process of rebuilding the school. Construction started in 2023 after a local company cleaned up lead paint and gasoline left in the soil after the fire. Rexford says the new gym includes a running track, a weight room, a play area for kids, as well as wood and metal shops. Students take buses to go there for physical education classes and recess.
A lot of the younger kids have never experienced being in a gym.
And in March, the school will host the regional tournament for basketball.
For our community to finally have their first home games in, you know, so many years, everyone's excited about that.
The next steps for the school rebuild will be constructing additional classrooms, a cafeteria, library, and the Inupiaq language and culture spaces, according to a press release from the North Slope Borough. The borough had previously said that the whole building was expected to be completed around 2028. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naidin.
Celebrated Athabaskan fiddler Bill Stevens died in Fairbanks late last month at the age of 92. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, co-performers say his music will live on in his students and in programs that spread fiddling across rural Alaska.
That's Bill Stevens playing his fiddle at the Pioneer Home, an assisted living center in Fairbanks, back in 2023. His accompanist on the guitar and frequent fellow performer Lisa Yeager says what you're hearing was his last public performance. She remembers it well.
Bill would play it at a lickety-split pace. You know, we had to, you know, keep up with him. And one of the things I really liked about Bill, being a guitar player myself, was that when he'd start a tune, he wouldn't tell you what the name of the tune was going to be, but he'd tell you the key. A good clue for the guitar players, you know.
Stevens grew up in Fort Yukon, where fiddle music and dancing had been a staple at Kuchin potlatches. He writes in his autobiography, Ch'adza Agwa, or He Carries the Dance, that Scottish and French-Canadian fur traders brought fiddles and jigs to the Athabaskan villages in the northern interior when they came to work for the Hudson Bay Company. That was over 150 years ago. But those lively refrains just stuck.
It is so much fun. It's done in groups and pairs and brings a lot of joy to my heart.
That's Kaylee Nelson, the parish administrator for St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Fairbanks, where Stevens attended. Nelson says she'll miss the lilt of Stevens' fiddle bouncing off the church walls when he performed for special services like Christmas Eve. She says those songs helped keep her culture alive.
I don't know my language and it hurts, but when I sing the music, it makes me feel connected to my people. It's hard to think about our history and our past. It makes you think about how resilient we are together when we come together and we sing together.
Former St. Matthew's rector Scott Fisher was friends with Stevens for decades. He says he was a true gentleman in the old sense of the word.
He was humble. I remember we did a Christmas pageant here, and we decided to use adults because it was too hard digging up kids. Bill was one of the three wise men, dressed as an old trapper.
Stevens' friends recall that his faith and St. Matthew's were a huge part of his life. The century-old wooden church is a meeting point of many different cultures. Traditional celebrations sometimes take place in the parish hall, especially jigs. Father Steve Reed is the church's current rector. He says the jigs are a way of honoring the culture, tradition, and history of its parishioners, and inspiring joy and hope in times of great darkness, cold, and loss. And for that, Bill Stevens was key.
Much of the world has acted shamefully when it comes to oppressing Indigenous people and suppressing languages and culture and tradition. And so here you have Bill teaching it, bringing it back, reviving it, people singing it, remembering it.
Stevens also trained several generations of musicians through programs like the Young Native Fiddlers. Reverend Bell Mickelson founded Dancing with the Spirit, a series of traveling music camps that Stevens helped teach. She says their goal was always bigger than just the music.
In a week, we really make those connections with the kids. And then by the end of the week, we usually have the elders and our other musicians talk to the kids about how important it is to stay away from drugs and alcohol,
graduate and become leaders in their community.
But friends and fellow musicians also remember that Stevens overcame years of personal struggles. Mike Mickelson is Bell's son and another one of Stevens' co-performers from over the years. He also traveled from village to village with Stevens to teach music through Dancing with the Spirit.
You know, the thing about Bill is that he went through some really challenging times, and he wasn't playing music, and there was a lot of things in his life that other people haven't come back from. And music pulled him out of that.
Bell and Mike Mickelson say they'll always remember him for encouraging Alaska Native youth to be their best, be proud of who they are, and for helping them connect to their identities with Athabascan fiddle music, sometimes even gifting them his own instruments. They say his music will live on through the generations of students he taught and continue to bring light and warmth to the world in the cold months. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone in Juneau, Wesley Early, Rhonda McBride, and Aliona Niden in Anchorage, Patrick Gilchrist and Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, and Samantha Watson in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.